Now let's take our Bibles, please, and turn to the book of Genesis. Both hours today we will be in chapter 29. Now we found in chapter 28, as we're studying Jacob, that Christ is both the ladder that reaches from earth to heaven, and we also found that he is the dreadful place that Jacob referred to, that is the place of worship. So there's no way to God, no way to heaven except through Christ. And that's what he said, I am the way. And then he is the only place of worship. He taught that worship is not in a place, it's in a person. And he is that person. And we worship him in spirit and in truth. Now today, what we're going to see ultimately in this chapter is that he is the man of peace. Without him, there is no peace between God and man. So I want you to join with me, please, in this chapter. But I want you to look, first of all, before we start at the very beginning, I want you to look over to verse 20. We won't quite make it to verse 20, but I want you to see something that Jacob said. After Jacob has worked 7 years in order to earn the hand of Rachel, it says then, verse 20, that they seemed unto him but a few days because for the love that he had to her. So that is a mighty, mighty love. Worked for 7 years, and it seemed but a few days. So when we look in this chapter, we've seen Jacob and all the trickery and all that he's been involved in. But in this chapter, Jacob is in love. And you would think that love would be enough, but what you find in this chapter is a mess. This is a mess. And I think probably she loves him. We know he loves her. I think she does. But nevertheless, it's a mess. Sometimes love just isn't enough. I think the thing that we'll see in this chapter is that God is sovereign. It must be that God is sovereign to save a sinner like Jacob. And it must be that salvation is altogether, exclusively, by God's grace. Whatever scheme of truth, whatever design of truth we find in the Bible, it must be that design of truth that most honors God's grace. It must be. So in this chapter, that's some of what we'll see. Look in verse 1. Jacob went on his journey and came into the land of the people of the east. And he looked, and behold, a well in the field, and lo, there were 3 flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of the well they watered the flocks, and a great stone was upon the well's mouth. And thither, or there, were all the flocks gathered, and they rolled the stone from the well's mouth, and watered the sheep, and put the stone again upon the well's mouth in its place. In other words, that was the process of what they did. The importance of water in that arid land, that desert land, is obviously observed. It must be protected. It must be guarded. And therefore the shepherds would together take that heavy stone off, and then they would water the sheep, and then they would put that stone back over where the water lay. Now verse 4, and Jacob said unto them, the shepherds that were around, my brethren, whence be ye? Where are you from? And they said, we're of Haran. We're of Haran. Now Haran was the city of Terah, who was the father of Abraham. And it was also where Lot and the family had departed to from Ur to go up to Haran. And they were there before they went to Canaan. It was in that city where the servant had gone back to looking for a bride for Isaac, finding that bride, and that would be Rebekah in the 24th chapter. And so this is called the city of Nahor. And it's also here Haran. Now look with me in 5 and 6, and they said, he said unto them, that is Jacob said unto these shepherds, do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? And they said, we know him. Sure, we know him. And he said unto them, is he well? Is he healthy? He's still alive. And they said, he's still alive. He's well. He's healthy. And behold, Rachel, his daughter, comes with sheep. In other words, yes, he's well. And every day about this time, his daughter Rachel comes and brings the sheep. So what's the story without a girl? So here the girl enters into the picture, and that's the lovely Rachel. And so here again we're introduced to her. She is the daughter of Laban. Laban is the brother of Rebekah. Rebekah is Jacob's mother, And this Rachel will play a highly important role in Jacob's life. And she is the shepherdess of her father's sheep. So she's a very capable young woman. And it's probable that she had some assistance to help her. But there's no question that Rachel is in charge. Now look in verse number 7. And he said, that is Jacob, "It is yet high day, neither is it yet time that the cattle should be gathered together. Water ye the sheep, and go and feed them." And then they said unto him, "We cannot until all the flocks be gathered together, and until they roll the stone from the well's mouth, and then we'll be able to water the sheep." And while he yet spake unto them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she kept them. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. So this highly valuable place is carefully cared for. Most likely there were a few trees that were around, but this would have been like what is referred to in Psalm 23 when it refers to lying down next to still water, or in the Songs of Solomon, chapter 1 and verse 7, which is a picture of the church speaking to Christ. It says, "Tell me, O thou who my soul loves, where you feed, where you make your flock to rest at noon." So here it is at noon. It's time for the sheep to come, and they're resting at this beautiful place. Now, what I read here is that it was normal for the shepherds together to remove the stone. But Jacob must have been strong, if this is what it means, because it appears that Jacob himself removed that stone from off of the covering where the water would be. So it had been cool there from the day before, hadn't been used that day. There's that beautiful water setting down there. And we aren't asked exactly what, we aren't told rather, exactly what goes on here. But can you blame him for wanting to find the water? But also, he seems to ask a question to be able to get a little bit closer to Rachel, and you can't blame him for that either. So this is the discussion that is going on. Now look in verse number 11. "And Jacob kissed Rachel." So all of a sudden, Jacob kissed Rachel. But let me go back and read verse 10 again so we get the meaning of this. "Came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban," which would have been the sheep that Rebekah would have brought there. And of course, he knows already that this Rachel is the daughter of the very household that he's looking for. He didn't know that he's looking for Rachel. He just knows that he's looking for a relative, and he knows that his name is Laban. He's never met him before, but his mother had told him about Laban, hadn't told him about Rachel. He's got to be a lot more excited about Rachel than he is about Laban. So as soon as he gets close enough to Rachel as a family member, he kisses Rachel. So he gives her a family hug, a family kiss, and she receives it, and he lifted up his voice and he wept. So that must have been a strange thing for this girl to all of a sudden be kissed by this stranger. And then Jacob lifts up his voice and he begins to cry over this. This is a kiss of courtesy. It's a kiss of a family love, and she received it in that fashion. Now, they're going to kiss again, but the next time they kiss, it's not going to be as just family members. It'll be a little bit more serious the next time. He lifted up his voice and he wept. Now, why would he do that? Well, he's rejoicing. It's a way of his rejoicing at God's providence, that God has brought him in the way, all the way to the right place. So just like when we talked about Rebekah before, here now is the right man in the right place, finding the right household and the right girl. So his trip to Bethel and to Haran had brought many experiences, a considerable reasons to wonder at God's dealing with him, some loneliness and some personal trial, but now all of a sudden, here is Rachel. And he couldn't help it. He raised up his voice and he wept. For those of us who've been in love, maybe we've had that same feeling, that same experience of joy at knowing that we found somebody that we could love. Well, look in verse number 12 then. And it says that Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's brother. And that was Rebekah's, that he was Rebekah's son. And she ran and told her father. This is an odd verse. You have to kind of read into this what's going on. When he says, I'm your father's brother, he doesn't mean literally an uncle to you, but he means that we're a part of the same family. Another verse is like this back in the 14th chapter where Lot is referred to as the brother of Abraham, but he wasn't the brother of Abraham. He was the nephew of Abraham, but it was their way of speaking. But actually, he was her father's nephew, which would make them cousins. And so I know that is odd to us, but in many cultures and in that culture, it was a common thing for them to marry. The same thing would have been true with Isaac and Rebekah, of course. And so at this point, everything seems normal. Everything seems under control. All is going well. Jacob is feeling good about where he is. And he's certainly feeling good about Rachel, but his world is about to be turned upside down. The trickery that has brought him to where he is against his brother Esau and against his dad Isaac has now brought him to a place, and he's about to be bit by the same trickery that has come to him. Reminds me of what it says in Galatians 6, where it says, "Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man sows, that shall he also reap. For he that sows to the flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. But he that sows to the Spirit, of the Spirit shall reap life everlasting." So when that verse is put before you, then obviously we're moved not to sow of the flesh. But Jacob has sown of the flesh, and the flesh he shall reap, and so life is about to get hard. Yet in all of this, I declare to you that Jacob is an elect of God, and he is a type of God's elect. As I tell you, what we're about to see is a mess. Everything seems good, but we're about to see a mess develop right before our eyes. Look in verse 13. "And it came to pass, when Laban heard the tidings of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him, and embraced him, and kissed him, and brought him to his house, and he told Laban all these things." Now you think when you look at Laban that this is a wonderful man. He is very kind. He is going to run out and he's going to meet his nephew. How glad he is to see him. He has nothing but the best interest for him in mind. But I'm also reminded on Jacob's side of a verse in Proverbs 29:11, which says that a fool utters his whole mind, but a wise man keeps it till afterwards. Well, Jacob didn't know that verse, and he didn't know that truth, and so he just went in there with his heart and his mouth wide open. And so they hugged, they embraced, they kissed each other like close families do. I imagine that they sat down to a good meal, and after all, Jacob hadn't had a home-cooked meal in several days, and you know how somebody's cooking is always a little bit better than what you're used to. You find something a little bit different, and that's great. Well, that's the way it was for Jacob. Jacob sat down there, and he ate, and his heart is full, and his stomach is full, and all the barriers are gone. And it tells us at the end of the verse that he told Laban all these things. Now, the question is, what are all these things that he's talking about? Well, I think that he goes back and he tells him his life story, because that's what people like to do, isn't it? We all like to tell our life story, and it's hard for us to know where to stop. So he went back and he told him, "Well, when I was born, I actually was born holding on to my brother's ankle. That I don't remember it, but that must have been quite an experience. And my brother came all hairy, and I was smooth, but I was holding on him to his ankle. And my mother told me that what I was trying to do was to get him to come back in there because I wanted to come out first, but that isn't the way it happened. I came out holding onto his ankle. But then God made a promise to my mother, and the promise was that even though I wasn't born first, I would receive the birthright and I would receive the family blessing. It would come to me over my brother Esau. But in order for me to make that happen, my mother and I had to enter into some deception. And so we tricked Esau, and I got him to sell me the birthright. And he must have told that with his eyes sparkling, his mouth crinkling just a little bit. He's excited about what he was able to get done. He was able to get that from his birthright. But then he said, but life went on. And it was time then for the family blessing, because my father is getting close to death. And so I didn't see any other way, and my mother didn't see any other way, and so we tricked him. And I dressed up like I was Esau, and I went in there, and I had goat's hair on my hands and my arms, on the back of my neck. And so when he reached out and touched me, because my dad can't see well, he said, well, your voice doesn't sound like the voice of Esau, but the feel is like the feel of Esau. And after all, the dish that you brought me to eat, it tastes good, and smells good, so you must be Esau. And so I'll give you the blessing. And so he acquired the family blessing. And so he told him all of that, and his mother then sent him away. And then he said, when I got out into the wilderness, at night I had a dream that was unbelievable. There was a ladder that came from heaven, and that ladder was telling me of the way to God. I don't know exactly what it all means, but there were angels descending and ascending up and down that ladder, and I saw that ladder as being the way to God. And then it was revealed in my heart that this is a dreadful place. This ladder is a dreadful place. It's an awesome place. It's a place of worship, and that there is no other place. So he told him all these things. That's one of the places where in the Bible I would like to be. I'd like to hear that story and see how Jacob poured out that story to him. Now, he should have kept his mouth closed a little bit longer, I'm telling you. He shouldn't have gone that far, but nevertheless, he did. So now then, look what it says in verse number 14. Laban said unto him, surely thou art my bone and my flesh. Now, what does he mean by that? Thou art my bone and my flesh. Well, he means, yes, I can see that you are physically a part of our family, but I can also see that there is a trait in you, just like the trait that is in your mother and the trait that is in my family. I think that the whole Laban family was a family that had no problem with deception. It was a way of life to them, and he just lived by deception. It's like what it says, that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Well, Jacob did not fall far from his mother, and she didn't fall far from the Laban family. So now, bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh, you're like us. However, what we're going to see is that Jacob is no match for Uncle Laban, and he doesn't have his mother there. His mother's the one who's come up with all the good schemes. He was the one who just was sort of the bystander. He was the tool in all of this to get things done. But it was Rebekah who was able to think of all these things, and she's able to think of them because of the background that she was from. Nevertheless, he's no match for his uncle. On the front end, Laban seemed to be a good relative, and so he says to him, come in, and I want you to make yourself at home. And so it tells us that at the end of verse 14 that he abode with him for the space of a month. So about 30 days. Their month would have been a little bit different than ours. My understanding is all their months were exactly the same. Ours vary. Sometimes we have 28 days, sometimes 31. So if we can say that this is about 30 days that he's there. And you can see old Jacob around there. I mean, he's used to being around the house, right? I mean, he's not Esau being out, so he's at home. And so he's there, he's helping around a little bit. He's taking the garbage out every now and then. He may help set the meal just a little bit. He'll do what whatever the servants are telling him to do, but he's not doing much. There's not much going on. He's living there as a guest at the goodwill and the hospitality of his uncle Laban. But I'm telling you, it's about to end. Look in verse 15. And Laban said unto Jacob, because thou art my brother, that is, of my flesh, shouldest thou therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall thy wages be? So I want you to think of it this way. They've had a good meal one evening, and Laban has been thinking about this. And he says, Jacob, let's go for a walk. And so Laban and Jacob go out for a walk in the cool of the evening. And as they walk, they see the sky that is blanketed by the stars that are up above them. And all of a sudden, from nowhere, Jacob says to him, because thou art my brother. And when he says, because thou art my brother, don't you know that Jacob's spirit soared, just went up? He said, I'm your relative. And he thinks, I'm about to be treated in a very special way. I believe that I'm going to have some gift that is going to be like that of maybe even the firstborn. He's about to make me as if I were his firstborn. So, because thou art my brother. But then just as fast as his spirit went up, it went right down to the ground. Thou shouldest serve me for nothing. Nothing's been said about work. Nothing's been said about him serving Uncle Laban. But all of a sudden, now things are changing. Shouldest thou serve me for nothing? Oh, that Uncle Laban, he's clever. He's crafty. He knows exactly how to say things. He lifted him up, and then he cut him down. And you don't live with Uncle Laban without paying your way. That's Uncle Laban. Uncle Laban represents the law. And you don't serve Uncle Laban without serving the law. And so the question is like this. Nephew Jacob, I know you want to pay your way. That's what he's saying to him. I know you want to pay your way. Well, what's Jacob going to say? I'm a lazy buffoon? No, I don't expect to pay my way. And you might think, well, why didn't he just go back home? Well, why doesn't he go back home? There are two reasons he doesn't go back home. What are they? Number one, he didn't want to face Esau. What's the second reason he didn't want to go home? He didn't want to leave Rachel. He's tied. He's trapped. He can't go anywhere. He's scared on the one hand. He's in love on the other hand. He can't go back. And Uncle Laban has seen the way that he's been looking at his daughter. He's not a fool. He knows what's going on. And so he's waited long enough. It's well set in his heart. 30 days have passed. And I know you don't want to serve me for nothing. So tell me, what would your wages be? What do you think they ought to be? So he's caught completely off guard. He's a mama's boy, but now he's being beat at his own game. And I imagine there is a moment of silence. And so now we're given some information we didn't have before in verse 16. Laban had two daughters, not just the one, Rachel. Rachel, we know, is lovely in every way. And then there's another daughter named Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. So you have Leah, she's the firstborn, and Rachel, she is the younger one. And it tells us in verse 17 that Leah was tender-eyed. We don't know exactly what that means, but don't ever refer to a girl as tender-eyed. That would not be a good thing to say. You boys, if you want to appeal to a girl, don't tell her she's tender-eyed. What it means, I don't know, but probably doesn't mean she's actually ugly. But it just means that there's something about her eyes that do not match up well with her face. Her eyes don't glitter, and they don't show the depth, of course, that Rachel does. And so then it tells us that Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. So you have these two sisters, one that is not nearly as beautiful as Rachel. Rachel, who is more beautiful than most. So everything about Rachel, her face, her eyes, her hair, her form, everything was most becoming. Her personality, we saw a little earlier, she's a strong, capable girl. Her personality makes her stronger, strength of body and character. She stands upright. She's very attractive. No question, she's more lovely than Leah. And so I pause at this juncture to remind you of something, though we're going to see in the end of our message. And that is the very last thing it tells us in verse 35 is that Leah has a son whose name is Judah. And it's through Judah that David is going to come. And it's through the line of David that the Messiah is going to come. So if Jacob had been able to look with eyes of spiritual eyes and see Leah for who she was, he might have chosen Leah over Rachel. But right now, all he's able to see is their beauty. Now look in verse 18. This will be the last verse for this hour. What a statement we find in verse number 18. Jacob loved Rachel. I've already told you that Jacob loved Rachel, so you know that. And you're prepared for that statement already. But Jacob is a man that you would think that the only one Jacob could love is Jacob. Would you not think that from all that we've seen? All that he really loved was Jacob. He didn't love his brother. He didn't love his father, at least not enough to keep him from lying to him, deceiving him. He appeared to only love himself. This is the best thing that's said about Jacob to this point. Jacob loved Rachel. Now, for a person, a man, to be able to love, actually love another person, may seem to us as if it's a normal thing, but it's actually fairly rare. The divorce rate is so high in our country. Been that way for a long time. The number of people who live together and then they go from one partner to the next. A big part of that is because they're not able to love someone else. They really don't know how. They're not able to. It's not in them to love another person. And they're just not able to. So here is Jacob. It tells us emphatically that he loved Rachel. That's a good thing about him. So it's the best thing we've seen so far. Well, the negotiation is about to begin because remember that he said, I know you don't want to serve me for nothing. In other words, you could just stay here and work for nothing if you wanted to, but I know you don't want to do that. So what would your wages be? So Jacob then learns, he knows already, but he's got these two daughters here. There's Leah and there's Rachel. He knows that Leah is the older and knows that Rachel is the younger, but he's asking for something here that's a little bit of an exception to the law. Here's what he says. He said, I will serve thee 7 years. So he didn't just stop there, though. He said, I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. Now that may sound to you like it doesn't mean very much, but it means a lot. Jacob didn't ask for wages and money. He didn't say, I will work for you and you pay me so many denarii every day, so much money every day, or give me so many sheep or land, but I will serve you for Rachel. I'll serve you for Rachel. There is such a thing as love at first sight, I think. And if there is such a thing as love at first sight, I guess this is it. He loved her, and he loved her in a very short period of time. He found her modesty, her humility, her diligence, her industriousness, her beauty, her humor, all to be exactly right for him. There's nothing about Rachel that would make him change his mind from the first time he met her at the well. So the negotiation begins. He didn't ask for wages. He asked for Rachel. He didn't have a dowry to pay his uncle Laban, as was customary. So he said, I will give you labor. Well, let me draw a little point here and I'll stop. Redemption cannot be worked out by working for it. Redemption must be altogether by grace. And this is the illustration that we see here because there is something that must be satisfied here that we're not being told yet, and it's the law. And the law cannot be satisfied by work. It must be satisfied by grace. I want you to see two words before I stop. In verse 18, you see the word serve. See it there in the middle of the verse. In the middle of verse 19, you see the word give. It is better that I give her to thee. But there is no giving going to take place. This is all about work that is here. No amount of labor can win or earn a just standing or state before God. It must be by grace conditioned exclusively on Christ. He earned righteousness. God imputed righteousness. It's altogether outside of us. He in His own sovereign power causes His people to look upon it and know that is their salvation.